This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com.
All right, there was a really thought-provoking question raised by Dan Hirschman at the blog, on the blog Scatterplot. So we all know that the life of an academic requires people to be mobile, right? Like, it's incredibly difficult to get a professorship anywhere, let alone near your hometown, close to your family. And so basically, this is a life where, you know, you got to go anywhere where you can. And, you know, there are people who go anywhere. People go to other countries. You know, and that means a lot of us leave home away from our roots. And Dan asks whether that shapes our collective worldview, if it produces like a collective bias or some type of groupthink. What do you think? How does the demands of geographic mobility that entail in our job, how does that affect our you know, what we see and the worldviews we convey? Any thoughts?
I mean, for myself, I mean, I can tell you that when I went on the job market in lousy 2008, I basically told myself there are places I will not go. I will just have to figure out how to use my PhD somewhere and somehow else, right? So there are those of us who only go where we feel like we have a bit of agency in where we go, and that we aren't as committed, I think, to the academy. But I think that the majority of academics will actually go where the job takes them. And I often wonder whether or not that actually messes with our collective sense of agency, right? Mm-hmm. Our collective sense of control over our own lives and over our own careers and production of knowledge. So
it's like a feeling of being dominated, of being trapped, and maybe it filters through.
Well, it also creates a situation that when you land, you're so disoriented and discombobulated that, you know, for sociologists, we really don't necessarily know the place where we land. And it takes us a good 5 to 10 years to really get those connections and be able to practice our discipline in a way that makes sense to where we are. So not only are we disempowered in sense of, or might feel disempowered of where we might land, but once we get there, it's a real scramble to try and figure out how do we fit.
Are you from Halifax, Howard?
No, I bounced around across the country and I came for the job. And it was a new region, a new set of institutions, a new set of policies. And I see this with my colleagues who we hire from other countries. When they come, as Richard would have experienced when he was at UBC, it's coming to get to know a different culture and a different kind of discipline even in some cases. And it takes a while to get used to that.
And yet the clock does not stop.
Exactly. The clock doesn't stop and the pressures don't stop. Yeah. And the insecurity you might feel when you don't have the connections of close friends and family just exacerbate it.
Or even knowing where to go to pay your electricity bill, right? So
the little things. Richard, what's your take? You've done it. You got chased out of America.
Well, you know, actually, and one of the reasons why I applied for a Canadian job when it opened up was because it was a year when the market was not particularly good for medical sociologists. And also, I guess there's always a little wanderlust bug in me too, and so that was the other inspiration with it. But I think in the case of Canada especially, I mean, you've got a country with fewer universities, fewer options, and so I used to explain to my graduate students, the odds you're going to get a job in Vancouver near your family or at least in British Columbia, is rather small, and I used to. It's these things that I, as a mentor, used to go to bed at night, sort of pondering, you think about this sort of more broadly too. There's always lots of talk in the gossip mill about which high flying faculty member moved here or is moving here or is recruited from this place. But the general reality is that that's not the reality for our field. And so, you know, when you think about people getting into these positions too and taking them on because for, you know, family considerations or, you know, or other sorts of reasons, you know, we really, there are many people who, you know, have much fewer options. And this is sort of, you know, where there are, you know, kind of might be sort of stuck in place, relatively speaking. And that does, that does carry over to, I mean, it spills over to other aspects of our lives, certainly. But, you know, when you think too about, workplace environment and culture and, you know, and doing your job every day and, you know, and the responsibility of teaching students and how, you know, and that, how that can spill over. I can, you know, I can only imagine in certain, I mean, I've been very fortunate and I'm always mindful of that, I've had opportunities that other people haven't. And I can only imagine what that must feel like, particularly, well, even just to, you know, you want to go on the market, even if for somebody who is looking to move. And it's not like you can immediately say you're in an environment that's not ideal for you. Maybe it's a toxic department even that you're in. Mm-hmm. You can't pick up and move over to check out the firm next door like you could if you were an accountant. And so you've got to wait a year and thinking how market cycles are. And so from a, just more of a, I guess this is the medical sociologist me now talking, but, you know, thinking about sort of just overall sort of well-being and how that spills over to our family lives and our personal lives. I mean, that's a pretty substantial issue.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, Richard, yeah. I mean, you can feel trapped, right? And in many ways, like academia is kind of a trap, right? Unless you can figure it out. Right. So there's that, but also too, I mean, I remember when I was in undergrad and I was thinking of being a professor and one of my mentors was an economist. She was a Black woman. And I remember her telling me my junior year, she was like, look, academia is a really lonely place for Black women. So, if you're gonna do it, try and make sure you're married before you go into it. Because otherwise, you will probably never get married. And I was like, I don't want to get married to anybody anyway. But but these are concerns. And I think that there are people who, if they end up in certain spaces, because of the way academia is arranged, like we don't know if there's going to be a job for your area of specialization for however long. We don't know if we're going to get lines. What's the economy going to be like? I think for some people, they end up, this becomes their entire life. And if that's what you want, that's great. But if it isn't what you want, I think that there are things about academia that need to be changed if we actually want to care about the well-being of our researchers, our faculty, our teachers, our grad students.
Yeah, on the topic of whether or not it shapes our worldview, let me propose some ideas. Maybe tell me what you guys think. Do you think that, you know, it's prevalent in our discipline for people to have to favor stronger public services, right? We want public child care, elderly care, affordable housing. Do you think that part of the reason why those programs are so popular is because most of us don't have access to kin, which is what I guess people would use to substitute public services?
Right, but isn't that a lot of America now, though? I mean, I think a lot of Americans now like have learned that, sorry, you got to be mobile. You got to go where the job is. And even if that means you only have to move once in your life, many of us no longer live near our families, right? Mm-hmm. Which used to be the case for sure when we were an agrarian society. But like, you know, as time went on, like that's less and less the norm in the United States. And yet...
I still think it's prevalent. I still think the majority live within like 10, 20 miles of where they grew up.
But I think what's actually kind of different for academics is we're often trained in bigger cities like Chicago or New York or LA, Toronto, London, Tokyo, whatever. But the reality is most universities are in towns that we've never heard of. Yeah. And if the job market's tight, you know, you end up in a small community. And if you're somebody who is a person of color or who's a minority or has any kind of linguistic difference, you may be the only person of your kind in that community. And it can get a very lonely very quickly. And I think that that's part of the situation that people end up facing. But at the same time, being an outsider can be a good thing in terms of how you see things, because you can make huge contributions to communities because you're not, you know, you're like an anthropologist, it's kind of different. You're trying to translate what you're seeing, and you offer things from outside that, if people are willing to listen, can see things a bit differently.
Very Zemelian of you.
I am a sociologist.
Sort of tagging on what Howard was saying too is even just sort of our own preferences of just, you know, where we want to, you know, being trained in a city and having sort of different sorts of tastes, and, you know, sort of a, I guess a cultural capital sort of argument here of, you know, and then you know, having this move into a place that doesn't have the types of amenities. And I mean, people really do make different sorts of sacrifices. It's not to say that you don't adapt, or, you know, or maybe, you know, then your life changes, or, you know, you have a family, and, you know, having a martini bar is the it's no longer important to you. But there's no doubt about it. I mean, as academics, you know, much more than I think than other sorts of professionals, you know, I do think that we ultimately do have to make many people do have to make a lot of different sacrifices in terms of for the sake of their career, at the expense of other sorts of things we all want to do with our lives.
Right? For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.